With its extreme toughness and traction, the new BF Goodrich Mud Terrain TAKM3 is built to climb, made to mud and created to conquer. Find out more at bfgoodrich.com.au. The BF Goodrich Mud Terrain TAKM3. What are you building for?
You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to Desert Rock FM or for downloading our show if you're a podcast listener from outside the Diamantina. I'm Errol Parker, and with me today, as always, is my colleague and friend Clancy Overall.
Yes, thank you, Errol, and thanks, listeners. We've got a big name guest in the studio today, so it'll be an interesting show coming up.
Yes, that's right. Clancy, we've got the next Prime Minister of Australia coming in here today, but he won't say it himself. He's going to stop by the Koala Mattress studio here on Daru Street to have a quick chat to us about his plan for the future of Australia and a few of the little nooks and crannies about the Labor Party that the layperson might not know about.
You might be jumping the gun a little bit, Errol, but granted, he does look like he could be in a decent chance of making that last little ascent to the top of the heap. The man we are talking about, of course, is Anthony Albanese MP.
Yes, the Angel of Annandale, the Baron of Balmain, and the Godfather of Glebe. Albo is coming to our humble outback town, and he's been kind enough to drop by the studio to shoot the shit with us down here at Desert Rock.
Yes, he does represent a part of the world that we often put in the crosshairs of our articles, but, you know, he is a good sport. By joining us, and in turn, I guess you could say we're a good sport by having him on. But before we get into our chat with Albo, you know, we'll be talking about all things from horses' heads and all that mafia business to, you know, the state of the Australian Labor Party. We better pacify our producer Murray from behind the glass wall and mention that you can get $200 off a Koala mattress or sofa when you use the discount code ROADKILL, and you can vouch for the brand as a valued customer, can't you, Errol?
Well, yeah, not personally myself, but my dead shit de facto son-in-law, who I had to buy one of these mattresses for, he's pretty much got squatter's rights over my sunroom at the moment. He certainly can vouch for the hardiness, comfort, and convenience that comes with a Koala mattress. So there you go. Anyway, I don't want to talk about him anymore, Clancy. We've got work to do here, and I just don't really want to think about that useless bloke. So let's focus on what's coming up. Albo.
All right, yes, Albo, a man who's been on the scene for a little while, a household kid from, you know, the aforementioned inner west of Sydney. He's slowly and patiently risen through the ranks to the point where he is ready to become the Don, and I guess we'll be putting that to him today. He's been doing pretty well at dodging questions like that of late, but of course there are some poll numbers that can't be ignored within the Labor Party, and a lot of people are looking to him. Now, we have written a fair bit about Albo, the part-time DJ, in the past, haven't we, Errol?
Yeah, we certainly have, Clancy. You were on the scene a few months ago when the Cardinal Camperdown, the member for Grandler, had a very close call with the Fuzz down there in Sydney Town.
Yeah, it was. It was in the developers' capital of the country, down in Sydney, when we reported on Albo almost getting pinched with a knife out front of his electoral office. A little switchblade. Apparently Albo's habit of regularly carrying a switchblade is a throwback to his days as a street-level henchman for the iconic Sydney activist and Golden Glove boxer, the late Tommy Uran. But yes, the street-smart character that he is, Anthony Albanese, quickly palmed off the switchblade he had on him to a staffer before the police could nab him.
Yeah, he certainly had his Canberra hat off by the sounds of things, Clancy.
For sure. He got his young staffer to hide the blade quickly in a secret compartment in the glove box of his charger and averted the danger, in fact, the scandal of being caught with it by the police pretty quickly. And all the while maintaining a cheerful smile in front of the old Greek ladies who were in tears as they told him he should be Prime Minister by now. It was an impressive feat.
Yeah, Albo certainly does love that charger, doesn't he? He actually called for an investigation after someone keyed the car down in Canberra. He called on many government agencies who probably have much more on their plate than a keyed car, but, you know, it's one thing to come between a man and his car. We were the only ones down there at the press conference where he basically laid out his plan. He was quite angry, he was very charged up. He said that he had ways of figuring out who would key the charger, but, you know, he ultimately wanted to do it the right way, the legal way, and the way that is more prime ministerial.
Yes, he told us he had a fair idea who the culprit was, clearing Christopher Pine pretty early in the piece, but he did threaten whoever it was that keyed his Valiant, if they weren't apprehended and made accountable by the law and the government agencies fit to do it, he would be looking to give them a Henson Park kiss if they kept fucking around with it, which I believe a Henson Park kiss, Errol, is where you put your go card, I guess that's with a bus card, in someone's mouth, and then punch it.
Yeah, it's certainly not the type of kiss you'd get from Christopher Pine. No, definitely not.
Definitely not.
I don't think we ever actually found out what happened there, though.
No, you don't really find out those kind of things. People like Albo, you know, Mr. Albanese, if you will, get pretty smart when it comes to sorting things out on the side. And I'm sure he got to the bottom of it, and whoever it was won't be doing it again. We did do another story about the member for Grainland more recently.
Yeah, we did. We exclusively covered Albo's trip to a local parish priest where he asked the man on the other side of the confessional to forgive him for what he was about to do to Bill Shorten, whatever that may be. The confessional, apparently it lasted for about an hour. At one point, Father Eric actually pulled back the curtain to try and find a shred of humanity left in Albo's eyes. But
yeah, we caught up with a shaking Father Eric for comment, but he did say he was bound by a strict oath to never speak a word of what he did hear in confession. Anyway, he's just stepped into our own confessional booth of sort, so we better forewarn our listeners, particularly our left-leaning ones. Some of the things that we're going to talk about today might rattle them to their very core, and that warning, of course, extends to the right-leaning Batuta Advocate readers and listeners. We are also going to be talking at length about their new pin-up boy, Mark Latham, former colleague of today's guest, and now very much an outsider to the ALP.
And the political system in general.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Albo.
It's good to be here.
It's great to get you out here in the Diamantina.
Always like being at Batuta.
And it's important to be in places like this heading into a by-election, you know.
Into five by-elections.
Five.
None out here, though.
Coming up at the end of this month.
None out here. I mean, you could put a Labor candidate up against a Little Proud, but you might battle there, I reckon.
I don't know. David's a bit vulnerable, I reckon. A bit vulnerable. He's a bit of an inner city Nat type.
Yeah, right.
I've heard that's what happens once you get the ag portfolio. I think that puts you on a bit of a...
Look at what happened to Barnbley.
Barnbley?
Yeah. Ended very badly.
Yeah, it did. And look, that's the thing about accountants. They throw on the Akubras, but they can quite often slip into the Canberra swamp, if you will.
Absolutely.
Now, tell us a little bit about the current political climate in Canberra. It's been a big bloody year. There's been dual citizens all over the country. You did very well to denounce your Italianness.
I didn't have to, unfortunately.
Yeah?
No, got to be. One time in my life, it's good to have a birth certificate with a blank next to your father's name. You know, clearly an Immaculate Conception or something like that was involved there. But, therefore, no legal status to my parentage.
So you didn't have the same issue as Matt Canavan, where you had a relative come out of the blue and say that they just might have applied on your behalf for a passport.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. So
on your behalf for the most grueling process there is in international bureaucrats.
None of that happened.
Especially now with the current climate going on in Italy regarding their immigrant intake.
It's a bit of a mess in Italy, yeah. I've met a couple of the prime ministers, but, you know, the problem is you meet them and get to know them and they're gone.
Do they claim you?
They're gone. Oh, they like the fact that I've got Italian heritage, and Albanese, of course, is a very Italian name, and so they like that. Think it's sort of a bit of a strange story that this fellow became Deputy Prime Minister way over in Australia.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that? You said you had the blank spot on your birth certificate, but you still took the Italian name, or was your mother Italian as well?
Yeah, no, my mother was an Aussie many generations going back, sort of Irish Catholic heritage. She was born in Camperdown. So was my my grandfather was born in Camperdown. My grandmother was born in Paddington. What happened was my mum went overseas, went on a ship, met my father, had a relationship with him. She was living in London at the time, became pregnant to him, told him, and he basically said that he was betrothed to someone from the town where he was from, in Puglia in Italy. Yeah. And it wasn't acceptable to have a child out of wedlock. My mother was very Catholic, so she came back, had me. I was supposed to be adopted out, which was pretty common of what happened at that time. And what usually happened was that young women would take trips to the country for 7 or 8 months, maybe to Batuta.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't do that. She was...
She held on.
She held on. The story was going to be that my father had died just before I was born and she lost the baby in the trauma. As it was, she decided to keep me, but she took his name, or she referred to herself as his name and gave me his name and told me that he had died. So I grew up thinking that my father was dead.
Yeah, right.
Until I was old enough as a teenager, she told me. And I then set about, once she died in 2002, I set about finding my father and found him in December 2009. And he passed away in January 2014. So then I felt like I could tell the story without causing hurt to my mum because she'd lived her life as a widow, or without causing any angst of a TV camera turning up at my father's place in Italy. So I've got to say, given the citizenship story and all the chaos around that, I mean, thank goodness I did tell the story in a book by Karen Middleton, available in all good bookstores, because it would have been very difficult explaining such a complex origin in the current climate.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, there's no latent New Zealand heritage. If Barnaby can get done without knowing, I'm sure they would spend a lot of time trying to find something on you.
They certainly would, but there's a 300-page book that's a very detailed explanation of why I wasn't in a position to renounce anything. But I do have the name, and I'm glad that I found my father and people I'm related to in Italy. It's a good thing.
Well, the last time we spoke to the leader of the opposition, he assured us that to join the Labor Party, you do need to have all of your documentation up to speed. Everything needs to be in order, and now we're in the situation now where at the end of this month we're going to 5 by-elections, 4 of which were triggered by the Labor Party, so...
We actually caught Shorten when he was nice and confident just after Ludlam had gone down. He goes, his words, and I think we have it recorded, we look after these things in the Labor Party, let me tell you. If there's one thing we're good at, of course there's a lot of things that you can't, particularly with that New Zealand heritage or Canadian, you can't find it all.
So do you think now they're going to try to model the application process around you, whereby to join the Labor Party, you do need a 300-page anthology that details
background. That, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Already, it's the documentation they asked for some again recently, I guess, because the election potentially is getting called, and we all had to fill in the paperwork again. It goes to about 20 pages, I think. So it's
so you grew up single mother.
Yep.
In the towers down there in Camperdown.
No, the little two story places. They're townhouses just opposite what was the children's hospital. So it was one block. You had two story houses, and then there's a block of flats, and it was surrounded by. You had the kids' hospital. You had metal foundries and Grace Brothers Removals and panel beaters on one side, Weston's Biscuit Factory on another. There were no houses anywhere near. It was just this sort of one block of city council housing. But a lot of the people, because it was city council housing, worked for the council.
Yeah. You came up under, and we've spoken about your mentors on our last interview, Tommy Uren, who was, you know, iconically associated with that. We can talk about everything he's done. But the thing is with Tommy Uren, who was a great, you know, advocate for equality, was a World War II veteran and a Golden Gloves boxer.
It's a pretty good combination.
It's a pretty good combination.
And a fighter for peace.
And a fighter for peace and a fighter for equality. There's no one that's lived that life anymore in politics. I mean, other than you that got to touch a little bit of that, do you find that that might be a problem in politics, that there's almost like this culture of...
That people go into politics as a career move, not necessarily an afterthought.
Well, one of the things that's happened is that a whole lot of people who would never have gone to university now go to university. Mm. I mean, I don't know what how many young people from Batuta get to university, but I should imagine the percentage is pretty high.
Mm. Yeah, well, they professionalised a lot of careers. We got through journalism in the 60s. Before that was a degree, it was a cadetship. But now everything essentially is a degree. Nursing.
Even journalism itself now.
Mm.
And you can go and spend 3 years inhaling all manner of things at a college, having the time of your young life, and then you come out at the end and you still know less than when you walked in there. But now you just got a piece of paper that cost
you've got a degree.
$18,000.
But I'm the first person in my family to finish school, let alone go to university, and that's pretty common. So people's background has changed. I said when there was a Liberal senator who was a prisoner of war with Tom Uren, Sir John Carrick, who died recently, aged 99. And I said in the eulogy in the Parliament that it was the passing of an era. These guys, being former Japanese prisoners of war, knew hardships beyond what we've experienced. Mm. And it's a privilege if you can learn off those people. And I had a relationship with John Carrick, not like I had one with Tom, who I was very close to, but nonetheless we met through Tom and kept in contact. These guys dealt with horrific conditions as former Japanese prisoners of war, but they weren't bitter at all either. They were very worldly. Tom came back. He was actually a manager at Woolworths as well in Lithgow. And then he came to Western Sydney and ended up being a member of Parliament. But he certainly didn't think that would happen, I'm sure, as he was at Changi or serving on the Burma Siam Railway.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that there's a lot of, you know, that era. There was a sense of compassion that might have even been beat into them that they could carry. And do you feel like there might be people coming from the upper echelon with the path kind of written for them? Tony Abbott is an example. You know, he didn't, he wasn't exactly...
Compassion isn't a strong word for Tony Abbott.
He wasn't exactly, you know, living off food stamps.
No. He was at Riverview with Barnaby.
Do you think you would be one of the few sitting MPs that has been in a fist fight before?
Oh, no, there's probably a few.
Barnaby, I guess he's a,
Barnaby.
After
used,
a few,
Barnaby used to be a bouncer.
Yeah, after a bit of sugarcane champagne, I think Barnaby would light up.
Well, you know, that could even be in their party room the way they're going. And certainly, Tony Abbott was a pugilist.
Tony Abbott never fought on the pebbles though. No. It was always in the ring at Oxford.
Things were a bit different in the inner city, I guess. In the 70s, you sorted a few things out. And
can you tell us about the day you got made into the Italian kind of community? We've written a few articles about Albanese and the suits that you often wear and the relationship you maintain with the fruiterers in Griffith.
I'm glad you appreciated my dress sense on that day. I think the
something about a black tie with a black shirt is.
No, it was actually a very rich purple tie to give, you know, a lot of thought went into that. And with the the striped suit. I think it was
very casino ownery.
Well, put it this way, I said to those people who were cynical in my office, in my team, about my dress sense on that day, have you ever seen a Sky News interview get such a run?
You were able to do that without any misogynistic comments, which was
it was just the look, just there, without opening my mouth. I managed to get my photo in national newspapers.
We gave you a run, yes.
Had articles. Well, you gave it a couple of runs, in fact.
What Corleone son would you identify with most out of the that famous family from The Godfather?
I love all three. I think that Godfather 3 is much maligned.
No, we're talking sons. Would you be Santino? Would you be the temper?
No, because Santino had some issues, to say the least, some of which were pretty unpleasant, his characteristics. I think his attitude towards women was left a lot to be desired, to say the least. I think I'd be the... Yeah, you'd have to be the Pacino.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah, you'd be Michael.
Every time, you know, that great line of the movie, you know, every time, you know, I'm getting out, you know, they drag me back in. And, you know, trying to be good, but, you know, occasionally bad.
Is it true you were at a christening the day Kevin Rudd was sworn back in?
Was it a christening? No, that is not true. That is not true. And nor have I ever been to a red wedding, to give a more modern example.
Now, we need to ask some of the big questions. You've got by-elections coming up. We've got opposition leader, great friend of yours, Bill Shorten, who is currently... You got those numbers handy?
He's the last... The last look we've had was 29 plays. Malcolm's 49 in terms of preferred prime minister, but the Labor Party et al. is in front for the 37th time in a row, I believe. So coming up to the...
We're on a roll.
To the end of this month.
There's a pattern here.
Yeah, I know. How do you think you'll go? I mean, you've got...
I think we'll win.
All four back?
Yeah, I think we'll win. Well, Perth and Fremantle... The other team haven't shown up.
Yeah, no.
You know,
no,
we kicked off, we've picked up the ball, we've ran, put it over the line in Perth and Fremantle. Like, that's over. This is the 1909 Grand Final, South v Balmain, replay.
This is a tragic talk. Replay. Yeah. 1909. Please, continue with your metaphor.
Yeah. I suppose the biggest test then would be the electoral long man, which has a fabled history, especially in recent parliaments. You've got the Wonder Boy, Mr. White Roy. He come up through there. You've got a whole manner of very colourful characters.
Bruff was there for a while too.
He was.
Remember him?
Yeah, Mal. And,
Mal. He was going to be. He was going to be something.
A bit like Dasher. It was written for him until he.
He's just gone until it wasn't.
Yeah.
So. Do you think we can expect to see you and Bill up there alongside Big Mal and his cohort up there day?
That's what we need.
I've been up there to Longman. I'll be back there again in the next week. It's a good part of the world, Longman.
We need to ask questions now. We're talking polls and we're talking history repeating itself. And we've made a few metaphors from, you know, Coppola movies to Bunny's grand finals, but the American election was an interesting case study in that Hillary Clinton represented, I guess, the establishment, and Trump came in, was an outsider candidate. And a lot of people argued that realistically it should have been a rebel election. You know, Bernie Sanders could have done that. Now we had with Shorten and Abbott. What, 2 years ago, they were the two, leader of the opposition and the prime minister, both representing the establishment, I guess you could say. Turnbull shot through, knocked off Abbott as the, you know, single, probably a different story, but only a couple clicks down the road from you was you know, single father, you know, self-made politician. And now you've got that man up against Bill Shorten, who's still got a little bit of that Hillary complex. Do you think there's going to be a point when, for example, you're pretty confident in these by-elections, but if a couple of these don't come through, Shorten's going to have to look at himself. And would he be willing to look at himself in a different way to the way Hillary looked at herself, which was to just keep charging ahead?
Now, I reckon that Bill is very determined to be the Prime Minister of Australia. He's had that fire in his belly for a long time, I think. I think we'll do well in the by-elections. We'll wait and see. We're not taking it for granted. But we've got sitting members recontesting in Braddon and Longman, which are the two close ones. But they're both marginal seats, so anything can happen. I think there's far more of the population today aren't rusted on. It used to be 40% voted Labor, 40% voted Liberal, and then you're worried about the 20 in between.
In places like Queanbeyan.
In Queanbeyan, that's right.
In the great seat of Eden Menara down there in the cold country.
It's very different now. So politics is more volatile. We'll wait and see what happens, but I'm very hopeful that we'll win, that will be a lead up to a win in the big one, which will happen sometime at the end of this year or at the beginning of next.
So we're getting a fair bit out of you using metaphors. Let's use another one that you might be comfortable with. Are you the third Burgess brother sitting on the bench at the Bunnies Grand Final 2014? You know, ready to run on there when your big brother breaks a cheekbone off the kickoff.
See, Sam stayed on.
All right.
Good old Sam.
He played the whole game there, Clance.
That metaphor doesn't work, mate. See,
but he did run on in the
South
end.
South players are tough, you know. Broken cheekbones, broken jaws. He just referenced Johnny Sadler.
He just referenced the 1909 Grand Final. I should have known that I was going to be stumped on that one. Are you Kalyn
Sadler
Ponga?
Was 1970.
Are you Kalyn Ponga sitting on the bench for Queensland Game 2 this year?
Well, I'm certainly a playmaker, and I play my role in the team. But I'm not the captain. Bill's the captain, and he's doing a good job as the captain.
Mm-hmm. So you're not going to go kind of Cherry Evans on him?
No, don't. I'd never do anything in a Manly jumper for a start. You know, so that immediately can be dismissed. You know, I'm sort of play around the scrum base somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, pass the ball, take the ball up occasionally. I'm more like a, you know, Tommy Radonikis type of halfback.
Yeah, right. Terrific.
You know, have a crack.
Tell us a little bit about Dastyari. How did you feel when you saw that all unfold? Did you think, mate, you're playing with fire?
Poor old Dasher. He's a mate of mine. I think he made some mistakes and he paid a pretty big price.
In the scheme of things, yeah, he's paid quite possibly the heaviest price for quite possibly the smallest misdemeanor over the past year in that ivory castle down there in Canberra.
Yeah, well, he certainly did. But I ran into him the other day, and he's pretty happy, I think. He's doing well. There's rumours about a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He's appealing on.
He might be our next Latham.
On another station. No, he'd never be, don't say that. That's the sort of, you know, that's like dropping a bomb that is completely unacceptable, comparing anyone to Mr. Latham.
Were you an MP when Latham was getting waterboarded by Howard in that election?
Yeah, I was. It ended very badly. Well, I think, to be fair, he was doing that to himself largely.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the handshake outside.
You've cooked it, mate.
The studio.
Mm.
I just thought, the whole world just saw that pent up aggression. You know, he.
Did you know he was a fuckwit back then?
I didn't vote for him. I begged people to not vote for him. I never was a Latham supporter. because I always thought he had this huge chip on his shoulder. See, it's a bit of a giveaway when you break a taxi driver's arm, right? That was before he was made the leader. Bit of a giveaway that there's some issues that need to be resolved over your demeanour. He did have, you know, ability and capacity, smart, no doubt about that. But, Australians dodged a bullet there, I think. And I think so did the Labor Party.
Yeah, it was a very odd
time. It was always going to end badly, really.
it was a pretty weird time in retrospect for the Labor Party. I mean, you had Simon Crean there, who historically then quite unpopular for some reason. You had Kim Beazley, who had a couple of attempts of trying to climb up the wall but didn't quite get there most times. And then I suppose you had the golden boy from South Brisbane there come in for you.
Yeah, and he got us there in the end in 2007. We've only won three times from opposition since the Second World War. And every time there's been a bit of oomph to our campaign, Whitlam, Hawke and Rudd, Latham was a difficult time, I think, for the Labor Party. I think when he did that infamous walk in the park when he shaved his head, that was a bit of a sign that there was something wrong. Smashing the photographer's cameras with a hammer and giving them back. Like, how many examples...
And giving them back.
Did people need?
Well, he fought a guy at Hungry Jack's as well.
He did. He was happy to... and then he harassed Julia Gillard, who, she had supported him becoming leader of the Labor Party. Mark was funny bloke. Funny bloke. And now he can't work out whether he's in the LDP, Liberal Democratic Party, or in One Nation. As long as he's not in Labor, I'm happy.
It's interesting about the LDP now, because no one really knew what it was until just a couple of weeks ago, where we had David Lionhelm said some fairly average things about Harry Hanson Young. And now there's a few whispers, especially in the media cohort, that he was only doing that because he was elected on a fluke, whereby when he was elected, he was placed at the top of the New South Wales sort of ballot for the Senate, and he had the word Liberal in his party name. So a lot of journalists and commentators that we've spoken to, they've said that this whole thing that he's doing is to try and win some votes so he doesn't end up out on his ass at the end of the year or early next year.
I think that's probably right. I think he's looking for attention. And look, we're talking about him.
Yeah, he's got it, hasn't he?
So that view of the world of, any publicity is good publicity, I hope is wrong.
Now, we're a bit short for time here, but we thought we might ask, policy-wise, you're very much a party man. If you were, for whatever happened, and were put forward to the top job heading into another election, are there anything, any kind of policies or ideas you'd like to bring with you and then first discuss once you're in that position?
Well, no, because I won't be in that position, see. That was a trick question that I managed to navigate due to my years of political skills. I guess I have a chance to put forward ideas now. I've never been shy. So one of the things I want to do is do high-speed rail.
Yep.
I reckon that is a cracker of an idea. It stacks up. It's happening everywhere in the world except for here. It should happen here. I don't think it'll go to Batuta. I think you need... What's the population of Batuta now?
Last census...
It's hanging around 55.
Yeah.
55.
Yep.
Thousand.
Thousand.
Yeah.
Not 55.
No, not 55.
55,000. Yeah, see, if you put another few O's on it.
Mm. So we're talking Wagga, Tamworth,
you'd Toowoombas. Be about the size of about the inner rings at Dubbo. You would be at about 55.
Mm. You need like, you know, a couple more O's on it at least. You need like 5.5 million.
All right, well,
so I don't think Batuta's going to grow to that. Not in the short term.
We will put the young men and women of Batuta on notice. But just there's one policy that we just like to thank you for on behalf of the good folk down the road at the Batuta United Breweries. Your long and hard work to make the lives easier of all the small brewers around the country. They'd like to buy a beer after this.
It's been a
short
ripper.
Interview's over.
You know, it's quite good. It shows that you can do some things from opposition and get some change. Mm. It's a big win.
Yeah, it is a big win.
And the government tried to get out there and claim it because it was their budget after all. But fortunately for me, I mean, no one believes that Scott Morrison knew anything about craft beer.
Mm.
Like, it just didn't wash.
He's more of a pure blonde kind of guy.
He's more a, you know, light beer shandy kind of guy, I
more
think.
A bit of Hillsong in him.
A red wine on a Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if it goes that far. Maybe
unless he's taking communion.
Maybe on a Saturday night.
A little bit of
Sunday morning.
Maybe on a Saturday night.
Now, another metaphor, and we'll finish with this one. You seem to be good friends with Christopher Pyne. If there was a scenario where there was an earthquake or a lightning strike or an explosion at Parliament House and you had to form your own party for the survivors across all parties, who would you... Is there anyone you reckon you could bring with you to form your own party with?
Wouldn't you like to see Christopher Pyne as the Minister for Sport?
You know, well, defence is...
He's a natural. He's a natural for it.
Well, I'd also like to see you having to wrangle Bob Catter as the education minister. That'd be good.
Education and Bob Catter. Well, that would be a fit. There's no doubt about that. But you'd think that you'd put Bob Catter in charge of industry. He'd be fantastic.
He would.
He'd get stuff built and done.
Like his inland canal idea.
Yeah. The last time we spoke to him, he said he needed $9,000 million to build a canal from the Gulf into Mount Isa. He said, if you take the rails out of it.
That's quite eerie, you know. You've spent too much time with Bob Catter.
Yeah. He's a good man.
Bob Catter is a good man. He's a good mate of mine. We actually have, here's a little known fact. In Parliament House, Bob Catter is on the first floor above us. We have our own little stairwell. There's nowhere, no one else to the end of him and no one else to the end of me. Just a little stairwell. The only people who ever use it are people from my office and Bob's office for the secret little arrangements that we have. Going up for birthday cake or coming out. He doesn't drink, Bob.
Just milk.
No, only milk.
Yeah. I guess you'd say, you know.
I reckon you would have got pretty good odds on suggesting to your listeners out there, if you said to them, what sort of beer does Bob Catter like? I reckon none of them would have said none of the above. None of them. I mean, you know, it just doesn't quite fit, does it?
Well, I guess, do you think Bob's going to miss you when you move office into the big house?
He's still trying. He's still trying. Mate, Bob will go wherever I go. He's how good's Bob? He's managed to recruit a new bloke who hasn't been elected by anybody, but still he's managed to recruit him a new senator.
Fraser Anning.
He's doubled in size.
Yeah. Love his...
That's an act of genius from Catter.
Pro-drinking policies. He's big on getting kids on the grog early so they avoid doing drugs.
There's not too many people left in the Red Room that have been elected to the party that they are in there.
That's true.
These days.
That's true. It's a bit of a revolving door. I got introduced to someone recently. I won't say who it is. And they... got introduced by someone, do you know? And I went, oh, no. She said, yeah, pleased to meet you. And, you know, what do you do? He said, I'm in the Senate. I said, oh, congratulations.
That's how it's been the last few years for you. Yeah. Well, good luck in the next election. And I'm interested to see who you pick as your deputy. But, yeah, no, it'll be an interesting one. All the best, Mr. Albanese.
Thanks, guys. It's been terrific as always.
Thanks for coming all the way out here, mate.
And good luck with the bullet rail. Bullet train. Speed rail.
Speed rail.
Speed rail.
Yeah, whatever. People call it different names.
What's the Japanese word?
The bloody fuss at Shinkansen.
Shinkansen. All right, well, good luck with the Shinkansen. We look forward to having a station near here.
Near here.
Near here. Give or take a couple of thousand Ks.
Birdsville.
Yes, we've gone a bit over time this week. Very interesting interview there with Mr. Albanese. Errol, I thought we might be able to get him to slip, but he's pretty well trained. He's been in this game a while. No matter how many metaphors, be they Godfather or South Sydney Rabbitohs related, he managed to avoid saying anything that'll result in a hot take on ABC Radio National. Anyway.
Yeah, it was like trying to juice a banana, Clancy. Very hard to get anything out of Albo, but, you know, he's a seasoned poly. This isn't his first rodeo, and I think we're just coming up to the top of the hour now, so I think we should move things along. Up next is Hello Sport, but before that, we've got the news bulletin there at the top of the hour. Until next week, my name is Errol Parker. Please stay out of the pokies and don't talk to the police if you don't have a lawyer present.
I'm Clancy Overall. You be kind to each other.
With its extreme toughness and traction, the new BF Goodrich Mud Terrain TAK M3 is built to climb, made to mud and created to conquer. Find out more at bfgoodrich.com.au. The BF Goodrich Mud Terrain TAK M3. What are you building for?